Remember when you got all excited because your favorite TV show changed things up by going on the road, on location somewhere? The Brady Bunch shooting those 3 episodes in Hawaii? Oprah Winfrey or Jimmy Fallon doing a week of shows in Florida or LA? Well, we're only 5 episodes into this podcast series, and we are taking the show on the road. So the time is now. Volume 1, Episode 5. This is Employment Law Now, and I am Mike Schmidt from Cozen O'Connor. I am so excited. Usually it takes years before a show gets to go on the road, but here we are. The whole ELN crew is taking today's very special episode to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And by whole crew, I do mean me and my microphone. We're in Fort Lauderdale, Florida for my firm's annual Southeast Employment Law Summit. A whole bunch of us from the firm are presenting on topics to in-house counsel, human resources professionals, and other employer representatives. Everything from updates on Supreme Court and EEOC decisions to medical marijuana and LGBT issues to OSHA and immigration to social media in the workplace, a whole full day of employment law issues and developments as we do annually in the Southeast region as well as in other regions across the country. If you're not on our mailing list and you do want to get on our mailing list so you can learn about future labor and employment conferences and publications that we issue, please let me know. You can either let me know through our website, employmentlawnow.com, or by my email address, mschmidt@cozen.com. You could shoot me an email, let me know that you or someone else from your company would love to get on our mailing list. So today's, again, a very special episode. One of the things that I do intend to do with our special guest now segment in future episodes, in addition to having outside experts and lawyers talk to you about particular areas that might be of interest to you, I also want to continue to bring on folks who are inside the corporation, like many of you are, to let you hear from others in the HR world and hear what tends to keep them up at night and the kinds of things that they do with their companies as a human resources professional to address those particular issues. So today, I've got two of the HR professionals who attended our Fort Lauderdale Summit here graciously agreeing to come on and answer a couple of questions about how they keep up with the law in multiple jurisdictions for their companies, as well as answering a question about a proactive approach to training managers who are actually in the trenches with their employees. But before we get there, I do want to talk to you about a few noteworthy and interesting developments in the labor and employment world since I last spoke with you 2 weeks ago. For today, nicknames, punctuation, and dates really seem to be what people are talking about. So let's get started with our Update Now segment and a few labor and employment relevant tidbits for you Washington junkies. Remember when you went on Facebook and you got so annoyed because all you saw were posts about what people were eating for dinner? Well, I could tell you that from my standpoint, I'm actually longing for those days again because of all the monotonous vitriol from both sides of the political aisle. It's very clear who likes President Trump and who doesn't like President Trump, and I can tell you that, once again, I long for the days on Facebook where I got to see what everyone was eating for dinner, where they were going on vacation, and all of those posts, because it is getting out of hand, but there is a lot to talk about, presumably, and a lot to opine on. First, President Trump's travel ban continues to be in the news. You'll remember the first go at it resulted in a temporary restraining order, and now another court in Hawaii just issued a TRO against President Trump's second attempt at a travel ban by executive order. However, even more recently, a court in Virginia found that the second attempt at a travel ban was actually okay and didn't violate the Constitution or was otherwise a problem. So it doesn't really help things for President Trump necessarily, because you still have two courts that have issued TROs that remain in place. But now it appears that the Supreme Court may get involved, because we do have a conflict between federal courts on this very issue, which of course makes the nomination of Supreme Court nominee Gorsuch even more critical. Secondly, the confirmation hearings for DOL, Department of Labor Secretary nominee Alex Acosta, began with the usual thumbs up and thumbs down, depending on whether you have an E or an R at the end of the word employ. But as I said in a couple of episodes so far, I do believe that because there is no crazy scandal involving nominee Acosta, he will likely be getting confirmed. It may take a little while. There may be some posturing by the Democratic side. But I do believe that nominee Acosta will get nominated and will get confirmed, I should say, and will provide some further update when that happens, to talk about what that will mean for the Department of Labor's agenda going forward. Thirdly, there was a bill that was just introduced in the House of Representatives on March 16th to amend the Family Medical Leave Act on the federal side to allow an additional type of leave, that is leave of up to the same 12 weeks for parents grieving the death of their child. It's hard to believe that there's going to be real significant opposition to this, but in Washington, you never know. So keep on the lookout, and we'll obviously update you on the status of that proposed legislation. And then lastly, for purposes of this update, our attempts to repeal and or replace Obamacare, which never ended up getting to a vote after Republicans pulled the bill at the last minute, presumably because they did not have sufficient Republican voting numbers, though those on the Republican side may say otherwise. It really is interesting. You have Obamacare, and everything has such a cutesy little nickname attached to it. Obamacare, now it's being called Trump Care or Trump Ryan Care. Sort of like every bad scandal, you just attach the word gate to it, from Watergate. Then it became Monica Gate, and now you have Nanny Gate, Travel Gate, Spy Gate, and Bridge Gate in New Jersey. It even gets itself into the world of sports with Deflate Gate and the New England Patriots. We are very much living in the world of hyperbole and 10-second sound bites. So whether it's adding care to something healthcare related or gate for some type of political or other type of scandal, as I said, we do live in the world of hyperbole and 10-second sound bites. It's a much different world that we live in now. We'll keep you posted on further updates on those issues as things develop. But we move now to our Noteworthy Now segment. And I have two cases for you that I think are both very academic on one hand, yet have very practical implications on the other hand. First is a punctuation lesson for all of us. And let me ask you something. When you are writing a series of something, anything, do you use a comma before the last word in the series, or do you not? Well, overtime law isn't causing enough headaches for employers, obviously, but an overtime exemption, particularly a state law one, and particularly the punctuation in the state law one, has caused a potentially $10 million headache for one employer in the state of Maine. The case is O'Connor versus Oakhurst Dairy, and it's out of the First Circuit Court of Appeals. The plaintiffs in this case were dairy product delivery folks who were working at this dairy company, and they claimed that they were misclassified and didn't receive overtime pay because the company considered them to be exempt. Now, Maine law has an exemption that says that there will be no overtime owed to people who are in certain categories, and I'm sorry about this being a little bit awkward, but it's important that I refer to it this way. People who are in these categories of employment are exempt and not entitled to overtime. Those who are involved in canning, processing, preserving, freezing, drying, marketing, storing, packing for shipment or distribution of, and then it goes on to define certain products. The issue involved is the last of that series that I just read to you, and what I will now refer to as Serial Commagate, because that's what this scandal is, Serial Commagate. And what's really important is that the potential liability of this employer really was determined on the placement or lack thereof of a comma in that series. Because, as I just read for you, those are going to be exempt if they were involved in packing for shipment or distribution of certain products. Now, if you put a comma before the last of that series, it would have read packing for shipment, comma, or distribution of certain products. But it didn't. The whole series had commas after each type of work that I read to you, except for the end, which then said packing for shipment or distribution of certain products. So this was critical in this case because the plaintiffs were involved with distribution of the products, but they were not involved with packing for distribution. So the whole argument in this case was, because there was no comma, are the only people who are exempt under the statute those who are involved with packing for shipment or distribution? Or, as the company was saying, there is an implied comma, and it should have been those who were involved with packing for shipment, comma, or those involved with distribution. Well, the court said no, there was no comma, so only those who were involved with packing for shipment or distribution would potentially be classified properly as exempt from overtime under this statute. So there are a few takeaways here, obviously. Takeaway number one, and I've said it before and I will continue to say it, you have to focus not just on federal law when it comes to these overtime issues, probably true now for so many other employment law issues, but overtime and overtime exemptions in particular, you have to be thinking about state and local exemptions, not just the federal ones. Second takeaway, you have to make sure you're reading these statutes and exemptions very carefully, right down to the grammar and the punctuation that's being used, because again, this one came down to serial commagate. And then number three, certainly consider lobbying your legislators to resolve this and force everybody in every jurisdiction to use a comma before every single or in a series. The second noteworthy now case I want to talk to you about, and this is really for those who like constitutional academic debates. Here the United States Supreme Court decided a very important issue in a case called the NLRB versus SW General Inc. And this issue has been going on for some years now involving a president's power to fill agency vacancies without Congress's participation. And what the Supreme Court just did is it just confirmed that President Obama's June 2010 appointment of Leif Solomon to act as the NLRB's acting general counsel while Congress was between sessions and hadn't yet started confirmation hearings for his permanent appointment was improper. The appointment of Mr. Solomon to act as the acting general counsel was improper. It was done at a certain period of time when Congress could not be involved. And so, while it's, again, a great academic discussion, and I'll save for all of you to read, and I'm happy to provide the decision if you'd like, I'll save the details and getting into the weeds of the decision for another time, but there really is a practical implication here beyond just the great academic debate that this has prompted. The result is that presumably everything done during Mr. Solomon's tenure is now invalid. So what happens now to those cases that were decided during his tenure? What happens now to the fines that were imposed or the changes that were made as a result of NLRB actions instituted by Mr. Solomon as general counsel during those years? And certainly, how will this affect President Trump and future presidents when it comes to federal agency appointments? I think we will see these implications start to play out in real time as we move forward, but this is, again, a very significant decision when it comes to the power that presidents have in a time where the separation of powers seems to be as important, if not more important, than it might ever have been. We move to our Trending Now segment, and here is an issue that I promise to devote more discussion to in an upcoming episode. Have you ever just wanted to terminate or take some other adverse action against an employee because he or she did or said something you didn't like, or he or she did or said something against your personal beliefs as a business owner? Well, what about if the employee does that on social media? Again, we know that whether it's Facebook or LinkedIn, which I, of course, just refer to as Facebook in a suit, or any of these other social media sites, what happens if somebody says something that you become aware of and you don't like what they're saying or what they're doing? Have you as a company taken action quickly? Have you taken some sort of adverse employment action against that employee, even without asking your lawyer about it? I know many times it's very simple for companies to say, well, we've heard about the at-will rule. We might not know everything there is to know about labor and employment law, but we have heard about this thing called the at-will rule. And Mike, aren't these at-will employees that we can fire for any or no reason at all? And again, in 2017, that is a yes answer that is warranted by that question, but with a big asterisk, because in my opinion, the at-will rule is not what the at-will rule was 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago. Sure, an at-will employee can theoretically be terminated for any reason or for no reason, but with the caveat that the reason cannot be discriminatory, retaliatory, or otherwise in violation of some law or regulation. And it's the latter part of that that really comes to play in this particular case. It's a case that's really no longer a case, but it does involve this continuing trend with technology and social media on the one hand and lawful off-work activities on the other hand. Here you have an individual named Bart Hubbock, who is a former columnist for the New York Post, and he happened to send a personal tweet comparing the Trump inauguration to other days of infamy, such as 9/11 and the attack on Pearl Harbor. Now, mind you, there were no words used in this tweet. There were just numbers. All he put in this tweet were the three dates of each of those historical events in a single tweet. Well, he was fired. And then he decided to sue the company, the newspaper, under New York's version of what's referred to as a legal activities law. Most states have legal activities laws, and they generally prohibit an employer from taking adverse action based on certain lawful activities that are engaged in by the employee off-premises and outside of company time. Last week, shortly after the publication filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit, claiming that the lawsuit was in fact frivolous, the plaintiff agreed to withdraw the lawsuit. So we're not going to get a decision or a verdict on the merits here, but there are two important takeaways from a trending now standpoint that I think is worth mentioning to you. Number one, these legal activities laws are being raised with increasing frequency by plaintiff's lawyers in all of the states that have them. And it is, again, a state issue. It's not a federal law issue. Most of these legal activities laws, New York, for example, but others as well, were really prompted in the first instance by tobacco lobbyists who wanted to protect smokers from discrimination by employers. But they are now expanded to cover all kinds of things well beyond smoking when an employee is engaging in a legal activity without using company time or without using company equipment to do it. So it's important that your company, before taking quick adverse action based on an activity or a statement that you don't like, it's important that you consult your jurisdiction's legal activities law to see if you're able to do it or not. Secondly is the issue of social media and the NLRB. One of the things that we've been hearing and talking about a lot, particularly since 2010 when the issue first came up in Connecticut, is the NLRB's insistence that if an employee is engaging in concerted, protected activity, even through social media, that that is activity protected by the National Labor Relations Act, the NLRA. And we have seen case after case and guidance memorandum after memorandum for the last 6 to 7 years faulting employers for taking action too quickly when somebody is tweeting something or saying something through social media that the employer just doesn't like. So you need to, as an employer, go through what I've referred to as a three-step analysis. I'm not telling you that as an employer you can never take adverse action based on some social media tweet or post. But I am saying that you do need to go through some analysis before deciding whether it's appropriate and lawful for you to do so. The three-step analysis, number one, is the activity, is the statement concerted? It's not just an individual gripe that we're talking about, but it's concerted to the extent that they are involving coworkers or they are seeking to induce the involvement of coworkers. So one, is it concerted? If the answer to that is yes, it is some type of concerted statement or post, we move to step two, and that is the concerted activity protected? Because not all concerted activity is going to be protected under the NLRA. It's really concerted activity that goes to the working conditions, the terms and conditions of one's workplace or job, that is really the protected activity. So if the answer to question number one, is it concerted, is yes, and the answer to question number two, is it protected concerted activity, is also yes, you move to step three in your analysis, and that asks whether, despite it being protected concerted activity, the employee has lost all protection of the act because his or her activity or his or her statement was so egregious, was so malicious when it comes to the employer's products or services that they, again, lose protection of the act. Now, I can tell you that third step is not a catch-all provision. There is a very high threshold, a very high strict standard for you to be able to prove that the employee otherwise lost protection under the NLRA, but it is there and it can be done, and there are some cases out there where the employee has lost protection of the act, even though what they said or did constituted protected concerted activity. But again, the takeaway here for this case that wasn't a case, make sure you consult your legal activities laws in your jurisdictions, and make sure you are considering the three steps that I just laid out for you when it comes to taking action against an employee because of his or her activity or statements through social media. Finally, we get to our special guest now segment, and as I said, we're here from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in my continuing quest to have you hear from your colleagues at other companies around the country to talk about labor and employment issues affecting them. And I am happy to have two very special guests to bring on today's episode. And hopefully they'll be able to give you some interesting and useful information in response to some of my questions. So let me introduce you to Yvonne and to Matthew. Okay, I am down here in beautiful Fort Lauderdale for today's episode, and I have the pleasure of having Yvonne from Florida with me. We're not giving company names to protect the innocent, but we have Yvonne from Florida, who is Vice President of Human Resources from her company. Yvonne, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael. Happy to be here.
Terrific. So as an HR professional in your company, and how long have you been in the HR field?
Over 20 years.
Wow, over 20 years. So in the 20 years, things have changed certainly when it comes to HR law and employment law.
Dramatically.
Depending on the president in the White House, depending on the mood of the states and the cities and all of that. So we're here in 2017 as a human resources professional. What kinds of issues keep you up at night when it comes to your company?
Well, one of the things that that I'm currently dealing with is an employee handbook. We operate in multiple states. So you used to have a handbook and you would feel compliant. Now with legislature at the federal level, at the state level, there's so many moving pieces. So I'm not sure, are we compliant in one state and not the other? And how to address all of that? And how to keep my team abreast of those issues so when we do face any sort of employee complaint or or just as an issue in general, how do we address it and stay compliant?
Yeah, it's a significant issue, particularly for those, as you said, employers, companies that operate in different jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. So much is under the wing of the states and the local cities and towns. It's not just about one federal law covering everybody anymore. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, the other thing that I think has changed so much is the nature of the workforce. I mean, I always say that employees have gotten much smarter
100%.
As we get to 2017 mm-hmm. than they were 10, 15 years ago. Part of that is just because of the information access that they have online through
Absolutely.
The internet. How have you viewed the change in the workforce, and what do you see as some of the challenges when it comes to the employee workforce of 2017 as opposed to prior years?
Well, I agree with you 100%. The access to information in 2017, when you receive a request for accommodation, for ADA accommodation, for example, the other day we received them with, there was a SHRM form that the individual accessed and sent it to us. So employees know the words, know what to say, know where to find the forms. And so, it's concerning, especially when it comes to leaves, ADA, discrimination. How do all these things intersect, and you know, how are we going to move forward in dealing with these issues?
Where do you tend to find your information when you're trying to keep ahead of employees who have the access to the internet? Are you looking, I mean, aside there are all kinds of lawyers out there, obviously, that you can call? Are there sources online that you go to try to keep abreast of things? You take webinars?
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say Cozen O'Connor.
Oh, look at that. You're going to plug here. I didn't even ask you to do that.
I think you know, having a solid relationship with your employment law firm is critical. Attending all sorts of employment law seminars. I think the SHRM National Convention is excellent. You know, definitely books by, you know, the latest scholars and readers on different topics. All of that is extremely helpful and important. You have to keep your edge. Stay sharp.
Oh, absolutely. Is there any particular issue that you are seeing when it comes to employee issues in the workplace that either you didn't see so much in years prior, or that it's happening a lot when it comes to employee types of concerns?
Well, I think you said it best in a seminar that I attended, where it's the same old issues, just different platforms such as social media, internet. You know, it's concerning because now, you know, you also said it well, and I see this all the time. Something that an employee may not say in the cafeteria, they feel very comfortable saying via text, or sending it via Skype. There's all sorts of issues and dangers there, where employees feel, you know, Skype is not being backed up, or, you know, all of these things aren't going to be scrutinized, and they're just not realizing that the policies do apply.
Absolutely. And as long as we're talking about social media, has there anything, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but is there any kind of great funky story that you have when it comes to an employee and a social media issue?
Well, it's not necessarily social media, but it involves texting, because now employees, you know, if they're going to call out, they're not going to necessarily call you. So this particular employee decided to call out, and instead of calling out, and you know, typical millennial, nothing against millennials, love them. I have one that I gave birth to. you know, this employee decided to text their manager, and it was around Valentine's, and he basically said, I had a great Valentine, you know, celebration. I can't make it to work today because of it. I love you, and here is a white bunny for you. And the employee sent a GIF, you know, as a picture of a bunny. But then, you know, he decided to just send another message and say, and here's one for your boss, Tim. And then he sent a black bunny.
So
now we had a white bunny and a black bunny, and Tim is black.
Terrific.
So yeah, so that didn't quite work out for him.
Did that lead to a complaint or something?
You know, ultimately, there were other issues there, okay. Performance-wise, attendance-wise, so that kind of was the straw that broke the camel's back.
But just as a great example of how social media and electronic communication, really technology,
and images,
exactly. In 2017, the realities in 2017 have just made it more of a challenge when you're dealing with the old kinds of claims like harassment, discrimination.
Correct.
It's just made it so much easier for companies to potentially get in trouble if they don't handle it well with HR professionals like yourself.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking some time, and enjoy the rest of your night.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, I am still here in sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I am really happy to have as another guest of mine, another human resources professional, Matt from Florida. Also, we're not giving his company name to protect the innocent, but I really am happy and appreciate your time, Matt, and spending a couple of minutes talking to us. I think it's very valuable, not only for me, but certainly for the listeners of this podcast, to get a sense of what other HR professionals are dealing with and what kinds of things have been on their mind. So you're an HR manager for your company, right?
Yes, sir.
And how long have you been in HR?
5 years.
And so certainly things have changed in the past 5 years. I mean, things in employment law are changing by the minute almost. What kinds of things, as we are here in the end of March of 2017, what kinds of things keep you up at night when it comes to HR issues that you have to worry about with your company?
I think it's all the changing laws. And frankly, what keeps me up at night is the managers. I have 250 managers spread out over three counties. 60% of my workforce is over the age of 50, so many of my supervisors have been supervising employees since the 70s and 80s. So when you talk about change, you know, just over the 5 years, we'll think about the last 40 years. And I have managers that have been used to doing things an old traditional way for a long time. And with the law, it's constantly changing. And it's hard enough for me to keep abreast of all the legal changes, let alone then communicating that to the diverse base of managers I have who are out there every day really interacting on the front lines with the employees that they're affecting. So as hard as it is for me to keep abreast of the laws and the changes that are going on, then how do I communicate that to managers who are spread out over a vast distance and make sure that they get the same information, and not only get the same information, but they're all on the same page and doing things the same way. So that's what keeps me up at night.
That's a very interesting issue to me. I talk very often and I give some presentations on the issue of performance evaluations, and I refer to it as the tie principle, truth in employment. So many times you have situations where after the fact you are justifying an employment decision because somebody has been a poor performer, yet you have performance evaluations that are done annually at least that don't reflect somebody's poor performance. And oftentimes I have found that even though the HR professionals and the higher-ups understand the need to be constructive and to be true in your assessments, when you're trickling that down to the managers who are on the front line in the trenches day to day, it often becomes more difficult, because I think some managers, some supervisors have a harder time giving constructive criticism to the people that they're working with every day. So to your point, how do you at your company go about making sure that all this information that the HR group has gets imparted to the managers and you're all on the same page? What kinds of things do you do?
Sure. And before I get to that point, just speaking off your question about the performance evaluations, we did a study this year because we're looking at changing our performance evaluation system from an annual system to a biannual at least. 92% of our managers in our study this year told us that they have not had a conversation with their immediate supervisor about their performance or about progress or about future potential within their memory. And that's not even within the last year. We're talking like they have no idea the last time they sat down with their own manager. We're a production-based organization, so it's all about how can I keep this piece of equipment operating in order to continue production. And we don't pay these guys to go out and make human resources-related decisions. You know, that's our job. And they look at us and say, hey, you're HR. This is your field of work. My job is to keep the machine running and the people on the machine. So this is your ball field. And we're in the HR office looking out saying, listen, this stuff that we're trying to tell you directly applies to what you're doing out here in the benefit of the company, the long-term growth and potential. So yes, performance evaluations, huge deal. We're trying to get ahead of the ball game, but it's a tough nut to crack because the culture is so old, really. It just an age, you know, and just in what they've been doing for so long.
It's hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
Absolutely.
In some respects, whether it's an age thing or it's just your tenure that you've been at a company for so long and you're used to doing things a certain way, it's hard to change behavior.
It is. So what we're doing to correct that now is we've implemented a lot of different new initiatives. The first thing we've done is instead of having an annual manager's training, because one of our struggles is how do you get 250 people that are spread over three counties to be in one place at one time if you're a 24-hour operation. So we look to the summer when production slows to get everybody together. And it's not everybody at one time, but we're going to get everybody together within a couple weeks doing sporadic training where we do the same training every day for several weeks in order to get everybody through. So that's the first thing that we implemented. The second thing we implemented is going to a quarterly, we call it a quarterly HR training session. Basically, we feed them. We bribe them with lunch. We bring them in. We have a short half an hour PowerPoint presentation on any things that are going on, new changes in the law.
Is it a buffet? I'll go too. No. if you do a
no,
buffet.
It's something easy like subs or pizza or something we can get on the fly. Just
I can be
in.
Bribed also, yeah, with food.
Exactly. And cookies, you know. So we bring them in. We do that. And then we try to communicate via email as much as possible. But the problem with email is we don't rely on it because anybody can just delete an email. If the email is too lengthy, you know, they just won't read it. You can put a read receipt on it, but that doesn't mean anything. And really, it's getting face-to-face with these people. So even if it's a matter of walking around, like I know who doesn't come to the quarterly HR training sessions. I will go out there and find them, and I will make sure they get the information. We've also implemented, and we're building on, a new project. We're calling it a training book. We don't really have a fancy name for it. But basically, it's a booklet that we've designed and created and printed in-house. And it goes through everything in four phases of supervisory development. So the first phase is all about the collective bargaining agreement. What's in there? What does it mean? What do these things do for you, or what you should be cognizant of? Here's the discipline policy. You know, how is this enforced? What are some of the pitfalls? And it's a self-based or a self-paced program. So you graduate from phase one to phase two to phase three to phase four. And the object is to get the supervisor fully integrated into what we're trying to talk about at their own pace, because every supervisor has a different job. You know, their time ability to take away from what they're doing is going to be different. And we respect that, and we want to work with that within the boundaries of our training program. So those are a couple examples of what we're doing.
It's so critical, because oftentimes you have a manager or supervisor that got to that position, really in some respects because that's just where the promotions over the years took them. And while they may be technically great at what they do and what they're supervising, when it comes to being managers and supervising a group of people, there's so much education that still needs to be done to bridge that gap between the human resources professionals and the people who are there in the trenches, as I said, day to day.
Right, absolutely. And even when you talk about employees and their ability to be delegators when you look at models, we talk about Maslow a lot. You know, all these things that are integral to like an HR education, you know, don't apply to an operational manager's perspective. So how do I communicate those principles that we've learned throughout the years into an operation manager's perspective, you know, using terms that they understand and grasp and breaking it down for them and to make them understand that this is really important to my employees and the way I manage my employees. One management style is definitely not the best for all employees. You know, and if you're an hourly employee who has grown up through the ranks and all of a sudden you're put into a management perspective, you may have only had one or two supervisors in your past, if you're a long-term employee, that you've had the gain off of, and you don't have any other models. So it's imperative that HR works proactively in order to show them, give them examples, explain the different models of leadership. That way they can develop into good supervisors.
And how many employees total do you have across your organization?
1,700.
1,700. So we're not just talking to mom and pop shop, obviously. And even though logistically it may be difficult and it may take some time and even some cost, it clearly is a critical thing for you to make sure that your managers are trained appropriately with these myriad of employment laws that keep changing every day.
Absolutely.
Well, Matt, thank you so much. Thanks. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, that's all for today's episode. We will be sure to continue to hear from other in-house folks in future episodes. But do you have any feedback? Anything that you would like to hear about in future episodes? Topics you'd like me to cover? Cases you'd like me to talk about? Outside guests you want to hear from? Or any kind of comment about what you've heard so far? Please, please, please shoot me an email, go to our website, employmentlawnow.com. You can post a comment, post a message. I welcome and appreciate all kinds of feedback, and I certainly appreciate all of you who continue to listen to our episodes. We're five in, and I've been really getting some good comments and good feedback, so I appreciate that from all of you, and hopefully you are finding that I'm giving you some useful information along the way. So until next time, from our very first on-the-road location, thank you so much for listening, and I hope all your labor is productive.